It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Orange and Brown Talk podcast, a Hey Mary Kay edition of the podcast. Dan Lobby with Mary Kay Cabot. We do have to start with one thing. We were talking about this before I hit record, but I feel like we need to talk about this on the podcast too, Mary Kay. Before you came into the room here in our virtual studio, you texted me that you were running a little bit behind because you were dealing with a lizard. Of course, everyone at this point knows, you know, Mary Kay is in Florida this week, working from Florida. So, you know, you saw manatees yesterday, you've seen dolphins, and now apparently you've seen a lizard.
Yes, I went to plug in my computer, and as I reached down to the plug, on the glass outside of the sun porch was a little lizard, and I just screamed bloody murder. I mean, this thing is 5 inches long, and I screamed like I just saw a Tyrannosaurus Rex. And he's still above my head here, and he's on the glass outside on the sun porch, and I don't know how he's going to get out because the sun porch is screened in. So we're going to have to deal with that later. But on the glass here, if we do video, which I think we probably will do some video today, we might have a little lizard sighting. So be prepared for that.
Yeah, we'll keep an eye out for our buddy, the lizard. So, all right, let's get to some questions from our Football Insider subscribers. And when you called out for questions, you talked a little bit about Joe Flacco before you told people we were recording the podcast, kind of laying out where things stand with Joe. Of course, there's been this building momentum, or at least an attempt to sort of build momentum for Joe to come back to Cleveland. And, you know, as you said, you think Joe is probably interested in being a starter first, which of course is not going to happen here. So this comes from the 216 area code. Hey, Mary Kay, what makes you so certain Joe Flacco wouldn't want to come back and be a backup? Maybe he wants to be a coach someday, so he would accept being a backup while he could learn and assist in the development of a young player.
Well, I'm not saying that he wouldn't come here to be a backup. This is actually his first choice for a backup job. The point that I'm trying to make, and that I don't want people to lose sight of, is that this is not his flat out outright first choice. He wants to play football. As I've said many times, he did not come off the couch to go sit on the bench. That's not what he wants. He wants to play, especially at the age of 39. You don't have that much left in the tank. You've got a couple more years left to actually go out there and start games and win games and help a team reach their goals. And certainly he does not want to be sitting on a bench somewhere. That's not fun for anyone. But I think what happened is when his agent, Joe Linta, asked around at the NFL Combine last week, I don't think that there were very many opportunities where someone could guarantee him an opportunity to either compete for a starting job or just to sign him outright as their bridge starter. If that had happened, then we would not be hearing what we're hearing right now from Joe and Joe, and that is that the Browns are his first choice. The Browns are not his first choice. The first choice is to play. Now, having said that, Joe probably does not want to go home and sit on the couch again and not have a job at all and wait for someone to call. Because even though quarterbacks were dropping like flies last year, no one called him until the Browns dialed him up after the 10th week of the season. And I don't think he wants to go through that again either, where he's just out of a job. I think the feeling there is that it's easier to get a job when you have a job. If a team needed a starter, he would be front of mind for a lot of teams. They could come and try to trade for him. But if you're sitting at home on the couch, it's probably a lot harder to get a team thinking, hey, what about Joe Flacco? So there are all kinds of things going on here. And I think we should also talk about, and somebody probably asked about this, I think we should address once again the elephant in the room, and that is Joe Flacco and Deshaun Watson coexisting.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. And I think, like, you know, you always need to consider where the message is coming from, right? And you touched on it. This is coming from Joe. This is coming from his agent. And they have a vested interest in kind of ratcheting up the fan base and people to say, hey, we loved Cleveland. We want to come back to Cleveland. And it's not that he wouldn't want to come back. It's just, you know, like you said, he's going to be 39 years old. This could be it. I mean, this could be his last year. How many? He's not going to be Tom Brady and play till he's 45. And so I think it would be hard for him to just want to be a backup. But I also think there's a reality they're facing that for as good as he was last year here, it was also, when you kind of dig into it, right? He completed 60% of his passes. He threw 8 interceptions in 5 games. The last memory everyone has of him is throwing 2 pick sixes in the playoff game. Now, part of that was just you had to do something. The defense got gashed in the first half. That was the real story of that game. And then, you know, Joe trying to make something happen in the second half through consecutive pick sixes. So it was great for the Browns. They needed exactly what he brought to them. They were desperate. He was desperate for a job. But again, when you kind of dig down into it, is he really a guy you're going to bring into your franchise to be your 100% starting quarterback next season? And I don't know that that opportunity exists for him.
No, it doesn't exist for him. It doesn't exist at all in terms of a starting job. So he would have to, as he mentioned in his SiriusXM interview yesterday, embrace and wrap his brain around the fact that he's not coming here to start. And having been the starter for his last 5 games of the season and for the playoff game and accomplishing what he did, throwing for 300 yards in 4 straight games and almost leading the league in yards down the stretch. I think he was number 2. You know, it would be very difficult for him to have to accept that backup role. Now, he would do it. He would do it. And one of the reasons why I think that he would think that this isn't the worst backup job in the world is everyone knows that Deshaun is coming off of a shoulder surgery, and no one knows for sure how that's going to go in the beginning. But I think that also factors into why you must proceed with caution in signing Joe in the first place, because we talked about this a little bit yesterday on the pod. We all know how the fan base feels about Joe Flacco, and you don't want to make roster decisions based on your fan base. But there are some unique situations in which it can be so overwhelming and so overarching that it can impact the performance of your existing starting quarterback. I've seen it happen before. I've seen it happen numerous times in my career here. And I think with Deshaun coming off of the shoulder surgery and with the fan base being wacko for Flacco, I just don't know that it's the best idea in the world to have him here on the bench waiting for his opportunity, especially if things might take a little while for Deshaun to get up and running.
Yeah, I agree. And I think there's, you know, I have seen some pushback where, you know, some people have kind of just said, like, who cares? This is the NFL. You have to have the best players. Like, you've got to be mentally tough. If you can't handle it, maybe you aren't ready to be a starting quarterback, or maybe you shouldn't be a starting quarterback in the NFL. But we've talked about this. This year is all about Deshaun. You have to make this work with Deshaun Watson. And if it doesn't, you've got to make some really hard decisions next offseason that affect you for a long time and change the outlook of your franchise for a long time. So you've got to make this work. And let's be honest, it's not like 100% of the Browns fan base is in love with Deshaun Watson. It was a controversial move when they brought him in. I think he's won some people over. I think he's won a percentage of the fan base over with a little bit of distance from all of the allegations. And also, let's be honest, when you go 14 for 14 against Baltimore and you win a game like that and you start to show people maybe you can be a franchise quarterback, that's a good way to win people over. But there is still a segment of the fan base that is never going to want Deshaun Watson to succeed. And so that, on top of just the love affair with Joe Flacco, there's a lot that goes into bringing him back. There is a lot of emotional baggage that comes with bringing him back. And so I think in this situation, it's completely fair for the Browns to consider that element in this decision.
Absolutely, 100%. And when you think about it, Deshaun Watson is already going to be overcoming a shoulder surgery, which comes with it its own set of psychological implications. You've got to get your confidence back. You have to feel that you can let it rip. You have to know that you are the quarterback that you were before and the one that this team traded for and spent so much money on. So he will have all of that going on in his mind. And I think he's mentally tough. You really can't get to this point or win a national championship in college at Clemson over Alabama if you're not a mentally tough player. But these guys are also human. And so on top of coming back from this injury, I don't know if he should also be saddled with a fan base that is in love with Joe Flacco. And everywhere I go, all over the community, that's all anybody wants to talk about, is Joe coming back? And if he does, people don't want him to come back just to help Deshaun and mentor Deshaun. That's not what they're talking about. This fan base, in many cases, wants Joe to play football. Everybody saw what happened the night they clinched against the Jets and what a magical night that was, and the kids and just everything that has gone on with him. I think it would be hard to put that toothpaste back in the tube. I think it would be very, very difficult. But having said that, I don't think it's necessarily a 100% deal breaker, but I think they have to give it long and serious thought. If you can find a quarterback that doesn't bring all of those elements into it and can just be someone that is ready to step in and can do the job for you in the event that Deshaun needs a break for whatever reason, it probably would be more prudent to sign someone else.
Listen, last year was lightning in a bottle. I don't know that Joe Flacco would come in as a backup and throw for 350 yards every game again. Now, I'm also the guy that said there's no way Joe Flacco is going to come off the couch and start throwing for 300 yards. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. But, I mean, there was a little bit of a lightning in the bottle element to what Flacco did last year. So it's not guaranteed that he would just instantly be that guy again or replicate what he was able to do. I do think the other element with Flacco, and we've talked about when you start to look at opportunities, when you talk about being a bridge quarterback, people here know this all too well. It's great in theory to think about we're going to bring in a veteran and have that guy start and keep the highly touted first round pick on the bench for a little while. You know what usually doesn't happen? First round picks don't usually sit for very long. unless you've got, I mean, like Patrick Mahomes did it, right? They sat him for a full year behind Alex Smith. But for the most part, first-round picks, when you take a guy in the top five, that guy's going to play. Because just the economics of having a cheap quarterback and wanting to get him on the field, just all of that stuff points to just get the guy on the football field. So even that, I mean, I'm sure Joe's looking at situations like that. If you go to New England and they take Jaden Daniels or Drake May or, you know, whoever, how long is Joe actually going to be the starter there? A month? Maybe? Maybe half the season? And at that point, that's it. You're done. The rookie takes over, which Joe has experienced in his life before as well when Lamar Jackson went to Baltimore. So it does feel like Cleveland would be the place. If I were Joe Flacco, I'd want to go to Cleveland too, because there is that chance that Deshaun could get hurt again and maybe you could ride in and be the savior one more time.
Yes, you're exactly right about that. There are no guarantees that if you are assigned to be the bridge or to compete for a starting job, that it's actually going to go that way. Rookies are always getting thrown into the lineup in their first year now, and even some non-rookies that you go to compete with. Let's look at Jacoby Brissett, for instance. He went to the Commanders. They gave him $8 million a year, and it seemed like he was going to start football games. And lo and behold, Sam Howell became the starter. So it never is guaranteed that it's going to work out the way that you think it will. The other thing to consider, and I think that there's something to this, is the fact that you might want some crossover in skill set, a little bit more so than what you have with Deshaun Watson and Jacoby Brissett. You don't necessarily want to reinvent the wheel in terms of your offense and what it looks like. Because I think that's what happened in 2022. The Browns were so geared to Jacoby Brissett and the things that he brought to the table, and he pretty much had the offense humming along, and they were adapting very well to him. And then Deshaun gets thrown in there, and he's running around, and there's scramble drills and off-schedule plays and all these different kinds of things. And they were not quick to adjust to that. And I think it would be much easier for everyone involved if they could just have a seamless transition to the backup quarterback in the event that they need him. And now you're not all of a sudden going back to, you know, the complete drop back West Coast, you know, that whole kind of offense. So, and especially now you have a new offensive coordinator in Ken Dorsey. He's well-versed in all different kinds of systems, but they brought him in to really showcase and focus on Deshaun as a dual threat quarterback, because we know he had worked with Cam in that way, Cam Newton. We know he had worked with Josh Allen in that way. So I think it would be better for them if they had someone that had a very similar skill set, or and not completely, not every dual threat quarterback is the same. They all have different arm strengths. They all have different speeds. They all have different styles. But if you have someone that can do similar things, then I think it's just a lot easier on everybody.
So there's one other element I want to touch on, and it's because Kevin left the door open for this at the combine when we talked to him. Is there any scenario where DTR is the backup?
You know, you're right. They did utter those words and make it seem like that was possible. But I think they learned their lesson enough last year to know that they can't leave themselves short like that. DTR is a good developmental project, but let's not confuse that with a good, experienced veteran quarterback that can go in there and win games for a football team that is poised to go the distance again, to make the playoffs. They want to win the division. They want to go deeper into the playoffs. And of course, they want to win the Super Bowl. In that scenario, I don't think that you can take your chances with a second-year quarterback who only has now, what, 3-4 starts under his belt, and the moment was at times a little too big for him. So even though he will take another step up this year, I don't think that they can do that to themselves, to their team, to their fan base, and put the Cleveland Browns in the hands of DTR. I just don't think they can do it. Now, maybe they said that because they're not sure that they can get another veteran quarterback that they really like. They should be able to. There are still some available. Now, one of the ones that I mentioned on yesterday's pod, lo and behold, I think I helped him get a job. Mitchell Trubisky, Cleveland native that Dan covered at Mentor, signed with the Buffalo Bills. And I, as I said yesterday, I didn't have any inside intel on whether or not they would be interested in signing Mitchell Trubisky. I just figured that he was a name that would crop up because he does have some mobility. He has plenty of experience. They loved him in the 2017 draft. There were just things about it that spoke to me and said, hey, maybe they'll give him a shot. Well, apparently they didn't, because they could have signed him. He was a street free agent. He was not with the team. Nobody had to wait until March 11th to negotiate with him, or March 13th to sign him. So I guess he wasn't on their radar. That leaves a couple of other guys. Jacoby Brissett is one I have mentioned, and also Marcus Mariota. Now, with those two guys, they'll probably have opportunities elsewhere. We've heard that the New England Patriots, who I've also mentioned as being interested in Joe Flacco, have real interest, apparently, in Jacoby Brissett. Now, I know firsthand that they do have interest in Jacoby Brissett. So we'll have to see how that shakes out, because if Jacoby doesn't sign in New England, then he becomes a candidate for the Browns. So this is all still very fluid, but I do think that they recognize the importance of a veteran backup.
All right, let's take a break, and then we're going to look a little bit at free agency on the other side here.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
and back on the Orange and Brown Talk podcast, Dan Lobby, Mary Kay Cabot, a Hey Mary Kay edition of the podcast. Quick update, we have not spotted the lizard yet. It has stayed out of camera, so that's good. I don't know if it's still, Mary Kay just looked around and is, she apparently can't find it, so the lizard has moved.
The lizard
apparently.
Oh, I see him. Oh, there he is. Oh, boy. He's jumped across the sun porch. He's now on the railing over, but it's screened in, so he can't get out. I don't know where he's going to end up. I really don't. I hope he has a way out.
I hope he got in somehow. Got in somehow.
Yeah, I'm hoping it wasn't through the front door, through the town hose is what I'm hoping. So he's over there. I'll take a picture of him later and send it to you. He's cute, but a little scary for me.
Yeah. All right. Well, Lizard Watch 2024, still ongoing here on the Orange and Brown Talk podcast. Let's look at free agency here, sort of as a whole, as we get closer and closer here. Mavro and Seabus. Hey, Mary Kay, not many contracts have been reworked yet. Is it players holding it up? Is Andrew Berry not planning on being a player in free agency? Mavro just kind of wants to know what's going on right now.
Well, you can push that all the way up to, actually, you can really push it up to March 13th. Because even when you're negotiating, you don't necessarily have to have all of those dollars ready to go at that moment. You've got to be cap compliant by March 13th. So you can talk in parameters with free agents on March 11th, even if you don't have all that money ready to roll and sign them up to it. So they have a little bit of time, but I do think that some restructurings will take place in the next 3 or 4 days. Who knows? Maybe even today. And they have easy places to look for that money. They have got Deshaun Watson, who will always be willing. I was thinking about the fact that if he really wanted Mike Williams, he'd be the first one to raise his hand and say, let's redo my contract. Of course, it's a win-win when you redo a player's contract because they get that upfront money. So there's Deshaun. There's Amari Cooper you can do that with. He would be open to it as well. And then one of the other ones I've thought about, and I have no idea if they would do it, is Jed Wills. Jed has a $14.175 million base salary for 2024, which is his fifth year option money. And if they decide to extend him, if they already know that they want to extend him, they can do some kind of a deal, lower that cap number, and create some space in that way. So they have options. We also know that they will redo Nick Chubb's contract, but they have no sense of urgency to do that right now. They have a little time on their side there.
You know, we're going to start to see these things happen. And honestly, I think we'll see even, you know, some of these restructures might happen later on. They might happen in the summer, or they might happen during the season. Like, obviously, they need to do some to free up cap space to spend here in the next week or two. But, you know, some of these restructures might come down the road even. And, you know, Jack Conklin is one. I wonder what they're going to do with his deal as he kind of tries to come back from that injury. We've talked about the tackle situation. But I do think Mavro brings up an interesting point here. Obviously, the Browns will be active in free agency, but in the end, could this just be kind of a simple, straightforward free agency? Go find a receiver, go find an edge rusher, and then just kind of, for the most part, run it back?
For the most part, you really can do that because they have acquired so many players via trades and free agency and the draft over the last 2 years that they have a pretty stocked roster. I don't think you and I could look at it today and find three places where we would say, oh my goodness, what are they going to do at that spot? Now, Corey Bohorquez, who I actually saw at the airport on my way here to Florida, Corey is a prospective free agent. So they either have to re-sign him or find another punter. But in most cases, they have plenty of depth at almost every position. We agree that they need another receiver. We agree that they're going to need another number two edge rusher, especially in the event that Z signs elsewhere. But for the most part, this is a playoff-bound roster. This is a roster that should have gone deep into the playoffs. So I don't think you're going to see, you know, seven free agents signed. I do think that they will fill a few holes. And in the event that they can find one or two really, really good players, starting caliber players, maybe even Pro Bowl players, that I do think they'll swing for the fences because Andrew is aggressive. He's aggressive like that. He went for Javon Hargrave last year, the best defensive lineman on the market. And that could happen again. I advocate that he goes after defensive tackle Christian Wilkins. But it could also go by with almost no fanfare whatsoever. There's a world in which they don't sign a receiver or a defensive lineman. So we'll just have to see how it plays out.
When you kind of look at the needs, there's just not a lot of top-end needs. It is like second receiver or second edge rusher. And maybe there's a disconnect between what we're seeing and what Andrew Berry sees in his roster. Maybe Andrew really likes what he's got in some of these spots. Maybe he really thinks like Elijah Moore and Cedric Tillman can do what they need to do in that spot. Maybe he really liked the development from Alex Wright. And of course, Oboe's on the roster. So, you know, it's some of it is what does he see versus what do we see? I think we certainly have some clear needs that we've identified, but even those are just depth, right? We're not talking about a top end receiver. We're not talking about the top edge rusher. So I think that's a big part of it too. You know, you need a linebacker, whether it's bringing back Taki and Walker or going out in free agency and getting a guy, but those you're not going to pay $10 million for a linebacker. We're talking about depth guys. So I do wonder if for all the big moves and all the headline splashy moves Andrew has made over the years, I almost wonder if this year might just sort of be a, okay, yeah, that made sense. They did what they needed to do, but there isn't like the big headline grabbing move that everyone's expecting.
That could absolutely 100% be the case. That could happen. I do believe that they feel Elijah Moore will have a much better season, even though he had career numbers last year. I do think that they feel like with Deshaun Watson playing for the whole season, that Elijah Moore will elevate his game even more. I think they see a big jump up for Cedric Tillman. You want your rookies to take about a 25% leap in their second year. And I think they firmly believe that Ced will do that. I still think they really like David Bell. And we know what Amari Cooper is. So from a receiver standpoint, even though we are identifying it as a need, I don't know that they have a sense of urgency to go out and find some big name guy. They also have the number 54 pick, which they can use that on a receiver. Or they can trade up to get a good receiver. And it is a very good and deep class. I've heard it compared to the 2020 receiver class, which Justin Jefferson came out of, and CD Lamb, and a number of Michael Pittman, I think, was in that draft class. That's what this one is supposed to be like. And if that's true, you should be able to find a really, really good receiver at number 54 overall or close to that. So they might not feel a great need there. And then when it comes to, as you mentioned, the defensive line, I do think that they were pretty happy with what they got from their edge rush rotation. And if you look at it, Oboe missed the final, I can't remember if it was four games of the season or something like that. But I think they feel that his pressure production and his disruption production and sack production would have been much higher from a statistical standpoint had he played the whole season instead of suffering a torn pec and missing the home stretch. And then I think that they feel like there's more that they can get out of Za'Darius Smith. Now that they've had him for a year, they know a little bit more how they want to use him. And you saw at the end of the season, he ended up getting three sacks in his like final two or three games or something like that. And I think that they finally figured out how they wanted to use him effectively. And I'm sure that their new defensive line coach, Jacques Cesar, will have thoughts and ideas on that as well. So I do think there is a world in which they would be perfectly happy with re-signing Z, having Oboe as their number three edge, and having Alex Wright continue to come up that learning curve.
Okay, a couple more here, contract-related questions. And this is one when we talk about potential significant moves in the offseason. This is an internal move, but a question about Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah. Hey, Mary Kay, do you expect that the Browns will extend JOK this offseason?
I do think that he is a candidate for an extension. I really do. I mean, look what he was able to do last year. He had a really, really nice season. He flourished in Jim Schwartz's defense. And I think the arrow is definitely pointing up on JOK. He's their second round pick. They love him. And there would be no reason not to do that. So as soon as they take care of other business and as soon as they clear enough cap space to accomplish all of their roster goals, I would think that that is something that they would take a very, very strong look at.
And he had such a good season last year. And he just, you know, sort of like with Grant, you know, you go in and you just get it done. You get him locked up for a few more years. And then, you know, because next offseason you might have some franchise tag situations. And, you know, maybe that's where you go with Jed next year. Maybe you have to franchise him. So you just don't want to have to deal with all that stuff next offseason. I think it makes sense. This is another one. Everyone just waiting with bated breath on this. This is actually, I went back into, because we didn't get to this yesterday, and I did want to touch on it. So this one comes from the 440 area code. Are they really going to let Kevin Stefanski go into this year as a lame duck coach, or will they extend him?
They'll extend him. They'll extend Andrew and Kevin. You don't win NFL Coach of the Year and not get an extension. He's taken the team to the playoffs twice, and he's earned Coach of the Year twice in his first four seasons. That cries for an extension right there. And Andrew has done a great job stocking this roster. They work very well together. They finally have alignment and stability in the organization. So absolutely 100%, both of these guys will get extended at some point this offseason.
And I think it's, you know, the importance of just having that stability. I mean, obviously, you know, in these 4 years, they've had two winning seasons, two playoff years, two non-playoff years. They've won one playoff game, but you can see the arrow pointing in the right direction. And just when you look across the division, just having that stability, I think these guys have earned more time. I think that that's kind of where I'm going with this, is maybe they haven't quite reached the heights you want to reach yet, but they've both earned more time to show what they can do. And, you know, we've seen how stability has benefited Baltimore. We know how stability benefits the Steelers. Even in Cincinnati, we've seen what that stability can do. So I absolutely think both of these guys have earned, if nothing else, they both earned more time to kind of see this through and see if they can get this roster where the Browns want it to get to.
Yes. And one clue that these guys are in great standing with the organization, of course, is the fact that they're going back to the Greenbrier for the first 10 days of training camp. You're not going to spend all of those millions and millions and millions of dollars on a couple of guys that aren't your long-term answer and your long-term plan. So they will do it. It's just really a matter of when and how. I'm sure there are negotiations probably going on even now. It's not something where you just call Kevin up and you say, oh, by the way, we have you for five more years. No, you have to negotiate with their agent and you work through things and you figure things out. So those kinds of things are happening, but rest assured, the Browns want Kevin Stefanski around for a long, long time. And same thing with Andrew Berry.
Okay, there we go. A Hey Mary Kay edition of the Orange and Brown Talk podcast. Still no lizard sighting, although I know where it is because I see Mary Kay look over at it every like 30 seconds or so. So I have an idea of, I don't know if it's getting closer or what, but.
Well, here's what's going on, Dan. I'm very concerned that the door from my room to the sun porch is not tightly shut. And if it's not, then that lizard is coming in to visit. And that's what I'm worried about. But I have to get a picture of him before he gets away, because he's, you know, he was the star of this podcast. So
absolutely. Okay. Well, we're going to let you go. This is going to be the last podcast we do this week, barring some kind of news. If there's some significant news that merits another podcast, we'll certainly get on and do another one. But we'll be back on Monday with the league year kicking off. We'll kind of recap everything that's going on Monday when Mary Kay is back in Northeast Ohio, away from her lizard friend, or maybe it will have snuck into her bag and it will have made its trip back to Cleveland as well. So anyway, those questions came from our Football Insider subscribers, cleveland.com/Browns, the blue banner at the top of the page. And of course, you know where else to find us: on Instagram, search Orange and Brown Talk; on YouTube, Cleveland Browns on cleveland.com, and subscribe to this pod on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Just in case we do have to do an emergency pod over the weekend, you'll get that as soon as I hit publish on it. Mary Kay, I will talk to you later.
Sounds great.